This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only. References made to individual securities does not constitute a recommendation to buy, sell or hold any security, investment strategy or market sector, and should not be assumed to be profitable. Janus Henderson Investors, its affiliated advisor or its employees may have a position in the securities mentioned, not for distribution in European Union member countries. My name is Andrew Chiguri and today I'm joined by Neil Herman, portfolio manager of the Henderson Smaller Companies Investment Trust. Today we'll be talking about the performance of smaller companies so far this year, why they're more resilient than some might think, and why the small cap story remains compelling. Neil, welcome to the show.
Afternoon, Andrew.
So it's been a challenging environment for mid cap stocks. How has the trust performed and how are you navigating the current market environment?
As you say, it's been a very challenging environment. Performance of the trust has been difficult this year, poor. We're down about 40% NAV this year. Probably the most challenging year or period since the GFC in 08-09. And clearly as a growth-based fund, it's been even more difficult. I mean, the reasons for the macro reasons of performance have clearly been difficult is a number of reasons. So, you know, you talk about COVID zero tolerance policy in China, a war in Ukraine, cost of living crisis, central bank policy of higher inflation and tightening monetary policy, and a potential economic recession. It's not a great cocktail for small caps. So clearly a very challenging year.
Going a little bit deeper into the portfolio, what have been the key drivers and detractors from performance?
Although this year has been very difficult from a performance perspective, we had underperformed our benchmark. It's not really about the stocks. This year's been all about the macro. So I mentioned about the key factors that have driven the macro environment this year. Also, the fact is we are, as we have explained plenty of times, a growth-based trust. We do believe that, frankly, investment in it is about growth, about the future. And the key thing really here is growth has materially underperformed value this year. The reason for that is rising interest rate environment, essentially higher discount rates, the future cash flows of those growth companies are worth less today's money, and growth has performed quite poorly in that context. So that's really the major reason. So although we've had stock winners and stock losers this year, the main reason is macro and style are the reason for their performance.
One of the interesting things is that though mid-cap stocks have struggled so far, such an underperformance has been a precursor to strong performance. Has this market provided you with any opportunities at all?
I think that's a very fair point. Small caps have materially underperformed large caps this year by around over 20%. That's quite unusual in history. There's periods in time when it's happened before. A precursor to very strong outperformance of small cap. And certainly looking at our own fund, you go back to the period I've been running it now for nearly 20 years, we've had five down absolute years. In four of those instances, the following year to those down years is a very strong up year. There's precedent for obviously a very strong bounce back in small caps given underperformance. We are seeing loads of opportunity. We can talk about valuation in a bit more detail as we go through this podcast. But a lot of things look very, very good value to us. We see intrinsically a lot of value in the portfolio. So that we are finding opportunity to buy new things. Not a huge amount of new ideas in the portfolio this year because fundamentally, why buy something new when you already can buy something you already know in your portfolio, which is a lot cheaper? It's a lot of topping up in existing positions and a lot of value we think inherent in the portfolio, which will come to fruition in the coming years.
We're in a completely different policy environment at the moment. So how are you navigating interest rate risk at the moment, given that it's becoming more expensive for smaller companies to borrow or service their debt and as interest rates go up?
In terms of your fund management career, you learn things over time. So one thing the GFC taught us in 08-09 was leverage is bad, particularly in periods when economies go into recession or go down. So that lesson has been learned. So if we look at our portfolio as a whole, 55% of the portfolio by value has net cash. Only 5% of the portfolio by value has leverage over 2x EBITDA. So on the whole, this isn't unique to us, basically the whole UK corporate sector, but we are probably less leveraged than most. Leverage is down significantly. So from a perspective of the funding costs of higher interest rates, a massive issue. We've probably got as much benefit from rising rates in terms of the P&L impact as we have from a negative impact, and we haven't got that financial distress. Additionally, also the banks aren't in any way we're like in 08-09. So I think from a balance sheet perspective, we feel very comfortable with the portfolio, and we have generally avoided high leverage. Clearly, higher interest rates is a function of trying to depress inflation and obviously demand destruction, and obviously that leads to recession, which obviously another impact on corporate profitability. But from a balance sheet perspective and a financial stability perspective, we are very comfortable with the stocks that we own.
So surprisingly, corporate earnings have been stronger than expected and company fundamentals have been quite resilient. Previously, businesses have been able to pass on rising costs further down the chain or to consumers. However, as the cost of living crisis intensifies and energy bills go up for smaller businesses, can they still manage to pass on these rising costs?
So let's start off with the point about profit performance. So yeah, I completely agree with you. The profit performance of the UK corporate sector in our portfolio has been very resilient. So if you look at it in totality, the composite aggregate earnings growth of the portfolio in 22, around 20%, and forecast to be about 14% in 23. So yeah, still with very robust growth. The 22 number's probably etched in now. We're almost at the end of the year. And realistically, I think we are going to see earnings downgrades as we go through 23 into a worse economic environment. There is tailwinds of currency impact on earnings and also the change in the corporation tax rate as well, which will help. But I think, yes, generally earnings will slow down, but have been remarkably resilient so far. And in some ways, that's a testament to how the portfolio and the companies have been operating in what's been a very challenging environment with inflation, rising costs. So you think about raw materials, logistics, energy, oil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Most companies have weathered those storms pretty well. We have seen that most companies have the ability to pass those price increases through to their customers. So that's where we're seeing an inflation environment because the prices are going up. So on the whole, the portfolio has essentially continued to deliver good earnings growth because they have been very resilient and have the pricing power to charge more for their underlying goods. And that's really important in an inflation environment that your companies have pricing power. I think as you go into 23, it becomes more challenging. The environment's more difficult. There probably is still some, kind of need to pass on increased costs, particularly around labor inflation. But actually so far, the record has been pretty good on that regard.
Well, it's interesting because I think the big variable in these companies being able to pass on those costs is the state of the consumer. What would you say is the current state of the UK consumer at the moment?
Consumer confidence is at record lows. We all read papers and news and whatever. We all know that clearly it's very challenging. We obviously seen an interest rate spike in the last couple of weeks. And mortgage rates have moved up considerably. There is a degree of distress out there. So yeah, I think the consumer environment is probably the closest you are to the UK and the European consumer, which is more impacted by high gas prices, the more difficult it actually is. The US consumer is actually in a reasonably good place at this point in time. To counter that, you have got a difference that you've got fairly full employment. Mm. So in unemployment at record lows of 3.5%. You've got rising wages. So one of the reasons about costs going up is wages are going up. So frankly, there's a degree of that helpfulness there really. And also, you had those savings built up during COVID. So there is a degree of kind of fat to go through. So look, I think it is difficult. It will be more difficult as we go through 23. We probably are going to see an economic recession, probably mild. There will be more unemployment. I would say that, although I said earlier about the portfolio having 14% growth in 23, I don't think it will do. I think, frankly, it will be lower than that because clearly the markets are more difficult. We've already discounted that in terms of share price movements.
Taking a closer look at the portfolio, you're underweight food producers, oil and gas, and coal companies, which some say stand to benefit from the current market environment. What is driving your underweight positioning at the moment?
There's a long-term strategic perspective in the sense that as a growth-based fund who invests in quality companies, food producers never really fitted the bill. Typically, price takers, low margins, low value add. And I don't think they're particularly resilient to recession, to be honest, actually, because unfortunately they've got some big old nasty customers who basically squeeze them. So that we've always been underweight food producers and probably will never change that perspective. Oil, gas and coal, we have got some exposure. Why are we typically underweight? One, from an ESG perspective, difficult area. Coal, for example, particularly is verboten from a kind of ESG perspective, but also because oil and gas companies, in terms of UK quoted, tend to be slightly esoteric. You have companies that are operating out of Kurdistan or Egypt or whatever, and it's more difficult from a kind of governance perspective. So what our investments, things like Serica and Harbour Energy, are UK North Sea oil gas companies, which we feel more comfortable about the governance and the taxation and the kind of the environmental aspects. So we are going to intrinsically be generally underweight the oil and gas space over time for those reasons.
I'd like to come back on valuations, which you touched on earlier. Are valuations among small cap companies currently more attractive than those within large caps, mid caps, or their US or European counterparts? And just to throw another question in there, in which sectors are you finding the most value?
I'm a UK small cap investor, so I don't get too worried about us compared to European or US peers, because that's not my job ultimately. I mean, I think I look at it in context of the valuations on the portfolio compared to large cap, but also to history. And certainly we've seen a significant derating of valuations in the portfolio over the course of the last year. So the average multiple of stocks in my portfolio is around 11.5 times next year's earnings, which is as cheap as I've seen it for a long time. So exactly this year, the point I mentioned earlier, it's declining in our valuations. It's not about earnings decrease, it's about the valuation applied to it. We see a lot of value in the portfolio. We could go through every stock by an example. And a lot of companies are looking compared to its GFC lows, and the valuation metrics applied then are trading at or below those levels. One of the things that we think about is, frankly, the valuations on our portfolio are very attractive. At the moment, it doesn't seem to matter. Markets are in a spiral regarding sentiment and confidence, but actually at some point valuations matter. And at that point then, clearly, I think there'll be a lot of upside in the portfolio.
History suggests that smaller companies are often oversold when the market perceives the climate to be a little bit riskier. But then, as we've spoken about, they tend to subsequently perform strongly. I guess the question is, how much of the bad news is already priced in? And do you think we're close to that market bottom before small caps start to turn around?
As I said earlier, I think this is unusual for small caps to do as badly as they have over the course of the calendar 22. The level of underperformance is pretty unprecedented. And when it has happened in 4 or 5 times in the last 30 years, the subsequent bounce back is quite extreme. I think you're right, though, that smaller mid-caps are very much like the eye of the storm. They fundamentally are more susceptible to economic ups and downs, less liquid, and you have a flight to safety of the large caps. And you've seen that the FTSE 20 has performed materially better than most of the indices this year. So small caps have suffered materially from that perception, but the scale of performance is quite extreme. We look at it and we think the valuation compression we've seen provides significant opportunity for bounce back when things normalize or stabilize. I think the valuations, I look at it today, and as examples of situations when companies where they are trading at well below their intrinsic value.
You touched on it briefly there, but smaller companies have a higher proportion of domestic sales compared to large multinational companies because, again, they're more niche on local customers. For the UK, what's been the impact of a weaker sterling?
You look at it down the market cap scales, and if you go, the FTSE 100 has around 70-75% of its earnings from overseas. As you go down the market cap scale, you become more domestic by nature. As our portfolio stands, around half of the earnings of our portfolio come from foreign currency. At this point in time, that diversification is good because clearly, obviously, sterling has been significantly weak against particularly the dollar. And that will lead to a bit of a tailwind for earnings this year as you translate this back into sterling. So there's exactly a tailwind from that coming through. And I said before, I think you look at it today and you'd argue that the US is probably in a better place from an economic perspective than Western Europe because of that gas price. Clearly, obviously, the European consumers are suffering from extremely high gas prices caused by the Ukrainian invasion. And what's happened subsequently was the US has got much more into the energy independence. So that's a bit of a tailwind. And we like those UK companies that have got an international spread and diversification and the ability to earn money in foreign currencies. So we do see a lot of value in UK domestics. We do like the diversification of having the overseas earnings.
For investors looking at the market at the moment, what would you say are the remaining reasons to hold small caps in the current market environment?
Yeah, exactly. A very challenging calendar year to date. I would argue that valuations look very compressed, trading at multiples not seen for a long period of time. We've got that balance sheet strength I mentioned earlier. So frankly, there's not a financial distress in the corporate sector. We don't think companies are going to be going bust. They'll trade through this and come through the other side. We are seeing signs of good dividend growth from the underlying portfolio companies indicating their financial strength and how they're doing. We're seeing director buying. We're seeing share buybacks or indicating companies think their own stock is too cheap. We are seeing corporate activity as well. So, we are seeing that valuation appeal to foreign corporates and private equity. So a number of bids in our portfolio, which again is a perspective of how valuations are very challenged and appealing. And I think that point is really exactly, small companies have already done very poorly this year. If you look at the longer term, small companies have certainly delivered strongly compared to large cap over the very long term. So that the LBS small cap effect for the last 65 years, small caps have delivered about an 8-fold return versus large caps, an average outperformance of 3.3% per year. I don't think any reason why that effect has been lost. We've just had a really bad year, but if you take a long-term perspective, now's a very good buying opportunity.
Finally, this might be a difficult question to ask, but again, someone has to ask it. What would you say is the silver lining in the current market?
I think I just mentioned a number of reasons why I still can be bullish. What we're all looking for is a catalyst or turn. That's quite difficult to pinpoint. They often are, to be honest, actually, why things suddenly get better. I think the two things I would say is that what could cause a turn in the market of some degree? One would first be probably a resolution of the Ukrainian situation. Unlikely, unfortunately, from what we're reading. The probably more important thing is a perception or the market perceives that inflation stroke interest rates have peaked. The problem throughout the course of 22 has been it's got progressively worse on every measure. Every time there's a new inflation print or central bank statement, it's become more and more hawkish. We've gone from transitory inflation to a situation now where the Fed are clearly being pretty aggressive. So I think at some point, from the base effect alone and what's happening with interest rates and the economy, inflation will start to roll over. And we get to that point, the market can actually physically say, oh, fine, we know what the rate's peak actually is, and we get a head around it, and markets can rally at that point. Now, whether that's Q4 this year, Q1 next year, I don't really know, but it does feel it's that sort of timescale to me.
Well, a lot to unpack there. Neil, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Andrew.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes.
Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London. EC2M 3AE and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority and Janus Henderson Investors Europe S.A. Reg number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg. L 1273 Luxembourg and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier.
Janus Henderson. Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Midcap stocks, the term given to companies with a market capitalization or value between $2 billion and $10 billion. As the name implies, a mid-cap company falls in the middle between large-cap, or big-cap, and small-cap companies. Small caps, a small-cap stock is a stock from a public company whose total market value, or market capitalization, is about $300 million to $2 billion. The precise figures vary. Small-cap stock investors are generally looking for up-and-coming young companies that are growing fast. That is, they're looking for the large-cap stocks of the future. Large caps, market capitalization, or market cap is a measure of a company's size. It is calculated by multiplying the number of shares in issue by the current price of the shares. Large-cap stocks tend to be easily bought or sold in the market, highly liquid. Leverage. Leverage has multiple meanings. 1. An interchangeable term for gearing, the ratio of a company's loan capital, debt, to the value of its ordinary shares, equity. It can also be expressed in other ways such as net debt as a multiple of earnings, typically net debt/EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. Higher leverage equates to higher debt levels. 2. The use of borrowing to increase exposure to an asset/market. This can be done by borrowing cash and using it to buy an asset, or by using financial instruments such as derivatives to simulate the effect of borrowing for further investment in assets. Inflation, the rate at which the prices of goods and services are rising in an economy. The CPI and RPI are two common measures. The opposite of deflation, fundamentals. Fundamentals include the basic qualitative and quantitative information that contributes to the financial or economic well-being of a company, security, or currency, and their subsequent financial valuation, where qualitative information includes elements that cannot be directly measured, such as management experience. Quantitative analysis, QA, uses mathematics and statistics to understand the asset and predict its movements. The rating, when the market changes its view of a company sufficiently to make calculation ratios such as P substantially higher or lower, this a re-rating. Hawkish, hawks are seen as willing to allow interest rates to rise in order to keep inflation under control, even if it means sacrificing economic growth, consumer spending, and employment.